Let's see. I am both a satisfied customer of MTurk.
Thank you,
and
sir.
And recently, an MTurk / casting words sweatshop worker.
So you've been a requester and a worker.
Yeah, I do a weekly podcast. And so, and one of them actually was with Nathan McFarland. And then he actually ran the thing through Casting Words, so it was recursive, right? So I got the transcript of the podcast about Casting Words.
Right.
Yeah. But anyway, so I ran a bunch of stuff through there. It was great.
The meta.
Right.
It kind
right.
of disappears into itself.
That was great, you know, from my perspective, at least at first. And it's clearly the most successful business running on there, it seems to me. I mean, there's all sorts of Casting Words stuff there. Then I signed up on the other side of it, and it was, you know, well, I mean, the whole Turker subculture is a strange deal in a lot of ways. It's a really interesting environment. That Salon article, I thought, captured a lot of the dynamics of it pretty well. But so here's the thing that I noticed, is that as a worker, it was kind of weird. You get these chopped up segments, no context, right? You know, and you know,
that depends on the hit.
Yeah. But in general, right? I mean, it's in Nathan's interest, right?
Some things are more compartmentalizable into a small. So some of the duplicate, we call them duplicate ASIN hits in Amazon. ASIN is our identifier for a detail page. Those things are a little bit more, they're still compartmentalized, but the whole thing fits in one compartment.
Yeah.
The thing that's interesting about the transcription hits is that it gets all segmented. You're not doing like a whole, you're not transcribing a whole podcast.
Correct.
So it's the compartment that fits around a unit of work.
Well, you could do, right? It's just not, it's not in Nathan's interest to chop it up that way from a throughput perspective, right? But
yeah, I don't know. I mean,
what is it?
I'm not sure. I mean, the goal of Mechanical Turk is to provide a piece of infrastructure that people like Casting Words can use in different ways, experiment with, and that's what we've seen a lot of, is people mostly doing experimentation,
right?
Trying to figure out, they see that there's something here, there's something different about this idea of micro work, and you know, but they for the most part haven't quite figured out how to use this new capability.
Here's the real question is that, because I talked about this with Nathan, and we got to the point where, so on the worker side, you know, there will be some workers who would prefer to take whole tasks, maybe trade off, you know, throughput or speed of task completion for more sort of, well, satisfaction, you know, pride of work, and maybe get paid more, right? And Nathan, from his perspective, also would like to be able to pay people
Excuse
more.
Me.
But apparently the way it's set up right now, that's not really an option, right? He doesn't really have access to the pricing system, or it's not something that he can vary experimentally. At least that's what he told me.
You can pay bonuses.
You pay bonuses
and you can also do qualification tests.
Yeah, yeah. He can't say like these people are, you know, ace transcribers, right? And I want to essentially raise their salary.
I believe you can. You should really ask Peter.
We should
Cohen.
Check. Into
you should
it.
You should ask Peter Cohen this, and he can give you the details. And maybe Adam knows.
That's not really. The details don't actually matter. I'm just
but
trying
the,
to wait.
But the, in terms of philosophy, it seems to me there would be no reason not to add that kind of capability, assuming it doesn't already
exist. Should be no reason not to add it.
Yeah, why not?
That's actually the question.
Yes,
is that from your perspective? The point that you made this morning was, we build all this stuff for ourselves,
exactly.
Right? And it serves an internal need.
Correct.
Now, as we bring it out to the world,
we're
going to find new requirements, right?
Precisely. And, so we will find out from Casting Words that, you know, and I don't know if this particular one is or is not, I don't know. But but I guarantee you we will find from them, they will say, look, this would be 10 times as useful to us if it did X. And then we will go about exposing API X to help them do that.
Now the question is, if the demand for X takes you away from the core compelling requirements that made you build the thing for internal use in the first place, right? At some point now, these incentives start to diverge, right?
No. Because these things, this is a very important point. So the way we think about this is, we have three completely distinct businesses. There's our consumer fit, and they're all customer-centric. There's a consumer-facing business, there's a seller-facing business, and there's a developer-facing business. And the way we got into the developer-facing business is by way of building things for ourselves and then realizing that we could expose them. But we have a separate subsidiary, Amazon Web Services LLC, and that group is now focused on the developer customer.
Okay, so you're prepared to evolve the stuff away from the original needs that
No, not just prepared, but doing it already and, and consider it essential.
Okay.
Because otherwise you would face a more customer-centric competitor who would do those things, and then you might as well not have bothered.
Absolutely.
So the external-facing web services, we will be a big customer. Amazon, the consumer-facing business, and the seller-facing business will be big customers of those services, but they will evolve to satisfy a much broader set of needs. Now, some of them, like S3, are at such a foundational level, and they're designed to be so simple. Even they will evolve. But you know, it's if you need to remember things, that's such a fundamental thing that it's going to have broad applicability across a wide range of web applications. Even from the beginning, and we do indeed see that. I mean, basically,
it's hard
to come up with a web application that doesn't need to remember things.
That's true. But you know, so we have, if you look out in the world, we have a handful of the usual suspects who are operating what I call intergalactic clusters. Right? You know, there's a handful of these people who have that amount of equipment out in the world, right, and are in a position to.
They're aliens somewhere laughing at that comment. They're like, you call that an intergalactic cluster.
But right, so you know, Microsoft, right? These guys are out there, and you are going to be ultimately beating up on each other in terms of sort of the commodity pricing on these offerings.
Well,
so it does come back to right?
I totally believe that that a key to being successful in this business, which is different from the shrink wrap software business, is to be a low cost operator. So,
but not only to be.
Not only to be. It's a key, very important, and there are other things. People are going to choose their services based on things like reliability, availability, cost, which is the one that is about being a low-cost operator. If you're a low-cost operator, you can afford to offer low pricing for your developer customers.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, if you're unavailable some of the time, or if you are low reliability and lose data or corrupt data or things like that, you're eventually going to lose your customer base to, you know, more detail-oriented, more effective.
Yep.
Web services providers.
Agreed. So, you know, I'm going to assume, correctly or not, that there are four or five players out there, and maybe a few more to come, who will be able to get to a place where they can deliver high-quality, low-cost services and will be competing with one another on those terms and will therefore be looking for other means of differentiation.
I totally agree that there will be multiple dimensions along which companies will be able to differentiate. In fact, I would go so far as to say I'm not convinced that this is a winner-take-all sort of business.
Right.
I think there may, in fact, be multiple winners providing these kinds of services.
So from that perspective, what would you think we could look for from Amazon, say with respect to S3, as a differentiator relative to others that are going to come into that same low-cost, high-quality space?
I think, first of all, some of the differentiation will come in the way the services interact.
Okay.
So it won't just be S3 alone. It'll be, and you see that already. You see the beginnings of that with S3 and EC2.
Yeah.
So, for example, there are no bandwidth charges between EC2 and S3. So you're already seeing a kind of interaction. It makes sense to have no bandwidth charges there because if we're smart about the way we organize things, it can be inside the same data center, and that bandwidth can be very, very low cost for us.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Some of the most interesting things will happen not with services but between services. The other thing that I think that will differentiate S3 over time, and you know, is to, if you want to stick to S3, is what happens and how it evolves and how it maintains its differentiation. You know, this is a future thing we'll have to check back in on. But today, the kind of things that differentiate it are the business model, the fact that it's self-service. You know, you don't have to go negotiate with somebody to get the pricing, that it's completely variable cost, pay by the drink. Those kinds of things are very differentiating. And then on the back end, the way we've architected S3 so that it's self-healing, that we don't acknowledge back receipt of your data until it's been stored multiple times, that it's been designed with high availability as its first and most important priority. Those kinds of things are, I think, what distinguish S3 today. It's also just early in this whole development of web services. So people are experimenting and trying to figure out what to do.
Yeah. Okay, it perfectly fits my inclination.
Sorry, we just have like 30 more seconds.
We have 30 seconds.
Yeah.
It's more fun to talk for a lot, much longer.
So in 30 seconds then, I promised someone that I gave a talk recently about this project that I've been doing for a few years now called Library Lookup, that is a way of making connections from book sites, including Amazon, but also others, into local libraries, so people can find out if it's actually available in the library.
Yeah.
And somebody said, does Amazon hate you? So I thought I would ask. I mean, my assumption is no. And you made the point earlier about flow today, and you know, which is a very sort of bloggy way of thinking and talking about this stuff, right? Which is to say, you know, that flow through our system, you know, the fact that I'm using my Amazon wish list now, yes, to bypass Amazon, you know, for some purchases, but on the other hand, I'm interacting more with Amazon than I was before. I always assume you don't hate me, right?
Not at all. Every librarian that I run into, usually figuratively, but sometimes literally, gives me a huge hug and says, you know, we use Amazon's catalog as a key resource inside our library. And they sometimes follow it up with, is that okay? You know, should I feel guilty about this? And the answer is, of course it's okay.
Right.
You know, and it works both ways. I mean, there are people who check a book out of the library and then want a copy, and they'll buy a used copy from us because that book might be out of print or whatever. So there is having that kind of flow. And, I would say to that librarian, you know, thank you for introducing people to Amazon.com when you use Amazon.com as a resource inside your library. And that is the flow point.
Exactly.